Good morning. This is Alicia Bales. I'm in the studio today for a special Fifth Tuesday Open Line show with 5th District County Supervisor Ted Williams, who will be with us for the whole hour to talk about his first 8 months on the board and to take your calls. This is the regular time spot for holistic health perspectives and mind-body health, but since we have a Fifth Tuesday, we've got a special open hour, so we're going to use this opportunity to invite Ted to come in and talk with us. But tune in next week for the regularly scheduled mind-body health with Dr. Marvin Trotter. But first, I'm going to begin with an update about the USOL fire west of Leggett. According to CAL FIRES, their latest incident report this morning, the fire is active with 130 acres burned and is now at 50% containment. And the fire is burning in heavy timber and slash at USOL Creek and USOL Road, 7 miles west of Leggett in Mendocino County. And also a little air quality report. According to Mendocino County Air Quality Management District's website, as of 8 a.m. this morning, air quality is good for Mendocino County. So Ted Williams is the 5th District Supervisor for Mendocino County. He was sworn in this January, along with John Hashak, our two new supervisors on the board. And the 5th District is a kind of meandering district that spans from Albion to the South Coast all the way to Boonville, Hopland, and parts of South Ukiah. So welcome to KZYX, Ted. Thanks for being here.
It's always a pleasure to be in Philo. I will point out that the district starts just north of Mendocino.
It does. So it goes all the way up to north. So Mendocino is in the district as well. And I know parts of inland Mendocino or the county from there all the way up to west of Ukiah as well.
West of Ukiah, Ridgewood Ranch, Hopland.
How do you represent such a huge area? Are you in your car all the time?
Well, people have asked me if I understand about the road conditions in their area. Actually, I do. As I've been driving around the county, I have a really good perspective on just what the current condition is.
You got stuck today coming up 128 to get to Philo. We'll start by talking with Ted about his overall experience of serving on the Board of Supervisors this year, and then we're going to talk about a bunch of specific issues. And then at 11:30, we'll open the phone lines for you to ask questions, for you to call in. That number, of course, is 895-2448, and you'll feel free to call in starting at 11:30. So speaking of the USOL fire, you were fire chief in Albion before you ran for supervisor last year. Did that experience motivate you to run for county office?
Somewhat. I think it was definitely a contributing factor. The public has a great concern about what sort of services they can get in response to a 911 call. And I've had some firsthand experience in an array of domains. And it's an area where I believe we can do much better.
And how, just to get started here, how you've been serving for 8 months. Can you give us an overview, kind of 8 month report? How's it going? And was it what you expected it would be serving on the Board of Supervisors?
I don't know that I had expectations, but I will say from day one, there wasn't a lot of hand holding. It was more, here's your office. Here's some committee assignments. A lot of figuring it out as I go. I would say that's still the case. Figuring out how to be effective, how to bring change, how to pull my colleagues along.
So it just kind of hit the ground running?
Pretty much.
I saw an article that Supervisor Hashak was going to some kind of workshop or training for supervisors that was happening statewide. Did you do anything like that?
Yeah, it's the California Association of Counties has a new supervisor series. I did the first two out of three. The third fell in conflict with two other meetings that I felt were important. And so, I asked Supervisor Hashak to bring back what he could. The first two were valuable. This third one was, looked like maybe half a day of content, 2 days away in Sacramento with expenses and with the conflicts just didn't feel justified to me.
Mm-hmm. Did the first two kind of help you get oriented?
They did somewhat. The value is working with people who have been in my position at other counties and borrowing best practices and learning the mistakes they made so perhaps I won't make the same mistakes. The other side of it is there's a bit of groupthink that goes on that, we get new supervisors together and say, hey, this is the way you're going to run a county. This is the way you work with your colleagues. I don't know. Maybe we want to go our own way.
And you are younger than everyone else on the board. Do you know if you're the youngest supervisor we've ever had in Mendocino?
I think Hamburg was around my age when he first ran.
The first time, all those years ago. Do you think that makes a difference too, to be of a different generation?
I mean, there's a lot of factors coming from the coast. It's been a while since we had a coast supervisor. And given that only two districts touch the coast, I think it's adding a lot of representation in that area. Being from a younger generation, I think I may be more aware of how the youth is struggling. You know, when we talk about housing, it's not abstract. When we talk about wages, it's not abstract. These are people I went to high school with that are trying to stay in the community. They're active community members. They're part of nonprofits. They're on fire departments. And it's tough.
Yeah, definitely. In May, there was a grand jury report that was pretty critical of the Board of Supervisors for failing to adequately communicate with the public. Although it did commend you and Supervisor Hashak for improving the situation since you joined the board. What do you think of the grand jury report? It was titled, Who Runs Mendocino County? Does it square with your experiences since you were sworn in? Is it fair?
Somewhat. I will say there's a lot of fingers pointed at the CEO for running the county, having complete control. And really, it's not the CEO's fault if that's happening. It's the supervisors, right? We're the ones who are elected. It's our job to ensure that we have staff carrying out our direction. And that has been my experience. If I ask our CEO at 9 o'clock for some information or a report, before lunch, she's back to me with a status update. And by end of day, a final answer. I've had zero conflict working with her. I don't know the experience of the other four. I don't know how much they're delegating to her. But my experience is she's really acting appropriately in the role.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the grand jury was very critical of just the way that the Board of Supervisors is communicating with the public. So I think they said the Board of Supervisors is reactive and issues directives and establishes ad hoc committees only as concerns and issues arise, as opposed to having some forward thinking planning where you're putting it out to the community that this is what, these are our priorities and this is what we're doing. Do you think, is there a way forward to creating more of that responsive, more public, accessible dialogue, or what are the obstacles?
Well, I think at the first meeting of the year, I brought up the need for a strategic planning session. And then when we went through the budgeting process, we identified some high-level goals and told staff, go work on a draft budget, bring it back, and we can bicker about some of the minor points. And this county needs to be looking 5, 10, 15 years ahead and set clear milestones in a living document where we track progress. If we're not keeping up, we should be asking why. What do we do about it? Do we change our priorities? But the budget is at most looking out 1 year. So I would say there is a major hole in the planning. What is that trajectory? Where are we headed?
What's keeping us from a much more long-term vision into the future?
The five of us, the supervisors. I've asked for an item that will be on an upcoming agenda. I don't know which one, but to consider zero-based budgeting.
What's that?
Start at zero and justify every department, every expense, rather than taking last year's budget, looking at that delta of whatever property tax revenue increase we have and working on how to divide that up. You know, what happened last year, we want continuity, but what happened last year shouldn't have such a dramatic impact on where we go tomorrow.
And how are people receiving that idea?
Well, the supervisors haven't talked about it yet. I imagine it might be contentious. You know, I think any dramatic shift in mindset will be met with some level of oppositions. We've been doing it this way forever. Why change now?
Mm-hmm. Well, and when you talk about 5 and 10 and 15 year planning vision, it kind of brings up right away the idea of how drastically our climate is changing and what we're really going to be looking at in 5 years, 10 years, and 15 years in this county. We're dealing with water, we're dealing with wildfires, we're dealing with all sorts of issues that agriculture that are really affected by climate at the center of it all. You want to talk about climate a little bit and how you think about climate and the board leadership on that?
Well, I'm thankful that climate change is being discussed. In previous years, how many mentions were there of climate change? And there is some proactive effort. And even if that effort initially is limited to dealing with adverse effects, you know, water comes to mind. I think water is an area the entire county can get behind. let's not wait until it starts impacting us.
You were presented in the beginning of the year, and I was part of the group that did this, so I had a kind of a front row seat to it, with a proposal from the community to create a climate action advisory committee that the Board of Supervisors would appoint. And now that's been handed over to you guys. You've taken it on as a project, and you're getting ready to take applications and actually make the appointments to the committee. How are you thinking about that? Have you gotten any applications in? Are people coming forward?
I have one application in. Each of the five supervisors will be appointing three. And hopefully we do it in harmony so that, you know, if I only look at three in my district in a vacuum, we may not have the right balance countywide. And I think there is board support for looking at all the applicants together and trying to work out a compromise so that we really get the diversity that the community deserves.
What kind of diversity are you hoping to achieve?
Well, geographic diversity. Certainly we want some people who, I wouldn't say we want climate change deniers on this committee, but we want some of the more conservative farmer types. They have a valid perspective, and you know, they're terrified that every time an effort like this is underway, it means more regulation. And we want someone from their industry to represent their needs and also be able to take back a message that we're working together to mitigate the scarcity of water that may come with climate change. And you look at RCD, every dollar contributed, they bring back multiple dollars.
And for those not in the know, what's RCD?
Resource Conservation District. And I mean, that's just one avenue. But the point is, if we wait, we may find we don't have the resources to adapt when we need to. Whereas if we're proactive and we start looking for grant opportunities in advance, we may find that we can address some of the hardships that climate change will bring.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about another issue that's close to your heart, which is before you were elected as supervisor, you worked on the Measure V campaign to address the use of herbicides in the forest and the standing dead trees that use leaves behind. Even though it passed with 66% of the vote so far, almost 3 years later, or is it more than 3 years later, the state attorney general hasn't issued an opinion and the measure remains unenforced. So you've been working to try to get this to move through, to get an opinion from the attorney general. Can you just give us a sense of what's going on with this? And if I got the Measure V thing wrong, just, you know, correct me.
Before I joined the board, the county voluntarily asked the state attorney general for an opinion about whether the ordinance is enforceable.
And what did the ordinance do? Just because I think people voted for it and then kind of forgot about it and imagined that it was now the law.
Yeah. Well, it took a long time for the county to acknowledge it and print it in code. And like you said, it has not been enforced. The issue we have is now that this opinion has been requested and we've waited so long, it's not binding, but it does carry a lot of weight. And an opinion from the attorney general will influence the enforceability. And the moment we start any sort of litigation, say we try to enforce it and the property owner takes us to court, that'll guarantee that the opinion is never released. So we've waited all this time for an opinion that does have value. Do we want to wait a little bit longer? It's hard to say. If it's a couple months away, by all means, we should wait. If it's 5 years off, no, let's begin now. Because frankly, it's a slap in the face to voters. The time to analyze this ordinance was before the signatures were collected. County Council reviewed it, signed off on it. Signatures were collected. It went to ballot. It passed. And now we're asking, should it have been allowed? It's a tough position. And we don't know whether it's that 2 months or the 5 years. But John Hascheck and I ran into the state attorney general at a Latino caucus in Sacramento. And we politely asked if there was any status update on the release date of this opinion. Surprisingly, he didn't know anything about it. And he was, you know, when I asked about 17202, he kind of looked at John, looked back at me, and I explained what it is and why the county is eager to learn of the opinion. And the next day, we got a call from one of his staff members who gave us an ETA of about 60 days. That's now come and passed.
But yeah, when was this meeting with Becerra?
This, I'd have to go back and look. It was the second new supervisor session in Sacramento. And of course, I have calls in and emails, and I know our county council has been continuously trying to follow up. And the only real information I heard probably 3 months ago is their office had a split of opinion. And that was encouraging to me that it's not an outright no, that they're actually having to contemplate and internally deal with some conflict about the opinion.
Do you have any idea of what that split might be about? What are the issues that the county was concerned about, and what the split opinion might be?
Well, it's a question of, do the people of this county have the right to protect themselves and their environment? And the answer from the state could be no, we don't have that right. It's the state has preempted our power. But reading code, that's not the conclusion I would read, where there's a life safety risk. And for those who weren't following, my motivation was not the poisons. It was, we're sending firefighters, a lot of volunteers, out to fight forest fires where there are trees intentionally killed and left standing. And you have helicopters over top dropping water. And if one of those limbs comes down, it's a widowmaker. It may kill a firefighter. And so at a minimum, there should be a cleanup or that's what the ordinance was about, that they can't just kill them and leave them standing indefinitely. It's a safety hazard.
It was an abatement ordinance, right?
Yeah, so on that life safety risk, I think the under code, the people do have the power.
And it wasn't about stopping the use of herbicides in the forest, which might have been much more difficult because of the way that the state law is around regulating herbicide use. It was about getting rid of the standing dead trees out there, right?
One could speculate that if they have to clean up their mess, it might be more cost effective to not use poisons to begin with. Maybe there are other methods. And so I went to Carrie Brown. Supervisor Brown had a birthday with family coming fall, the same time as a rural counties meeting that was held in Death Valley. And so I was honored to serve in her place. One of the takeaways is RCRC has been working on creating a 501c3 to set up biomass plants. And I know there are some environmental concerns, but you have to look at, we've had some large fires, the largest fire in state history. The carbon footprint of that fire is enormous. The impact on air quality and impact of life is significant. And biomass may be one of the answers to cleaning the forests. You look at the early photos and there were 40 to 50 trees per acre. Now we have 500. Mm-hmm. And if you leave it to the timber companies chasing a profit motive, they're not going to take that underbrush. There's no value. It's in the liabilities column. But if you can chip it and pelletize it and, you know, say maybe ship it to Japan where they're trying to get off nuclear energy and they need another source for when it's dark, they can't do solar and they don't have wind. That may be an overall benefit to the climate and a benefit in that we can avert this fight that it's no longer environmentalists versus timber companies. Both sides see that there's a solution at hand.
Mm-hmm. Well, wasn't there also some talk, I know this isn't in your district, but in a local biomass plant for around Fort Bragg, that not necessarily shipping it off, but there was some talk about finding some incentive to clear the really fire-prone underbrush, mm-hmm. rather than just hacking and squirting and leaving the trees there to go up. I also have heard that the hacked and squirt trees, when they've been treated with imazapyr, don't burn the same or something. There's something that happens to the wood, and it's kind of pithy. And I don't know. There's a whole lot about that. But it's just fascinating that after almost 3 years that a county initiative that passed with such an overwhelming majority can't be enforced.
It's frustrating.
What does it do for our democratic process here in the county when it's so clear? Such a mandate. Just to remind listeners, this is Alicia Bales and my guest here on On KZYX is 5th District Supervisor Ted Williams. He'll be here in studio with us for the whole hour, and we're going to open up the phone lines in about 5 minutes for you to call in and ask questions as well. That's 895-2448 is the on-air number, and we really value your participation in this conversation in the effort to have more communication between the supervisors and the county. And I also hope that we'll hear from your compatriots on the board from the other supervisors as well. I'll invite them to come in and spend an hour talking with us. There's a lot of things that that you've been outspoken about since you joined the board. Recently, there was a contentious board meeting where PG&E came to give a presentation about their planned blackouts in order to respond to windy or hot conditions that might, you know, be fire conditions, and so they're going to shut down the grid. They came to give a presentation to you as the county, and you were not satisfied with what they said. Do you want to talk about what happened at that meeting?
Yeah, I'm not satisfied because instead of improving their infrastructure, again, they're looking out for profit. They're just going to turn us off. That's cheaper than making the infrastructure upgrades that are necessary. And turning off electricity potentially to an entire county may leave the vulnerable in a position of facing death. That's a concern to me. And to see that PG&E shrugs it off, here's some brochures, you know, here's a slideshow that doesn't really even pertain to your county. Look, they told us about fire cameras. I asked how many are in this county. Zero. They told us about undergrounding. I asked how many miles in this county. They said zero. They told us there's a website where the public can view the live cameras. I asked, you mean of Sonoma County? Because you don't have any here. And he said, yes, if you want to see Sonoma County, this is the site. It wasn't applicable to the concerns we had. And in the end, in the beginning, before the meeting started, I told myself, be good, shut up.
That's never good advice.
Someone previously in my seat had told me that the constituents like teddy bears, just be a teddy bear. And I'm trying to balance that with representing the concerns I hear from constituents. And it really set me off when we learned that we couldn't even expect a phone call. Our Office of Emergency Services or the CEO, someone should be receiving a phone call who can acknowledge it, that we understand in 2 hours we're going to go dark countywide. We can't do a lot of preparation, but it's better than nothing. In the end, all we could get is a commitment of a robocall. We don't know if anyone will even hear it. Could be left on a voicemail, unattended. I think it's outrageous.
Is that really what they're talking about, a two-hour lag time, two hours of warning?
It's worse than that. They can't even tell us. You know, if there's some wind in Lake County, they might just shut us off. And then they need to inspect the lines before they can re-energize. How long will that take? We're told it could be 5 days. In the winter, we expect outages. We understand we live in a rural county and with crumbling infrastructure, but usually it's segments of the county. If you're out, you can drive to another town and get gas, grocery shop. With the whole county out, we're just not prepared.
Have you managed to get any more clarity since that meeting?
No. I've reached out to the PUC, but no further clarity. I did watch the live stream of their session in Willits, where once again they didn't have answers. To the credit of my colleagues, I will say that I expected to be scolded in the meeting when I brought up concern. Instead, all four joined in. I mean, this is an area where there was unity. The board as a whole had equal concern for how this will affect our residents.
Yeah, when something like this is happening, nobody needs a teddy bear. We need you to fight for us. That's a really interesting question, too, because as you've been on the Board of Supes for 8 months now, and you're learning the ropes, and you know the training wheels are off, and you've just got to hit the ground running and fight for your priorities. I guess it's fight. I'm not even sure. You've had a few kind of one person votes in the last couple of months, one on the asphalt plant and one on a grant to Redwood Community Services. And I wonder about how you balance that. How you balance the consensus building and understanding the when you have the votes and when you don't, versus when you know it's time for you to take a stand on some issue?
Well, I think we're trying to avoid groupthink. And it's okay to have a split opinion. And in the case of the asphalt plant, my concern was there's a process. There's an exception to that process when there's a clear public benefit. That public benefit was not established. We heard the quarry will have to shut down mid-July. I would ask, we're almost through July. Has it been shut down? These planning hearings have applicants speaking who are not under oath. The impression I got is an applicant can say anything to sway a vote. And imagine if I were talking about putting an asphalt plant up against John McCallum's house, Carrie Brown's house, Dan Jurdy's house. I won't mention Hascheck because he was recused. I think, people who are picturing that in their residential subdivision will ask, why can't you go through the normal process? In the end, needs to be somewhere. Maybe it is the right place. Maybe it will be approved. But why bypass process to fast track without evidence? And then on the, what was the other?
The Redwood Community Services
grant. Oh, yeah. I think the burden was really on the provider to give us a clear understanding for why this contract makes sense at $19 million. It's not for us to pick it apart and prove that they're doing a poor job. It's for them to prove that they are. I didn't feel that that was met. And, I hear they're doing better than Ortner. Well, Ortner is not the bar. What we care about is, are we spending every dollar as best we can? And I expect more than, five or six slides showing how many patients were served. I want to know, are we tracking 5 years out, multiple years out, to say somebody who's gone through the system is staying clean, is, not continually cycling? I want to hear that employees are satisfied. They feel that their voices at the very bottom of the org chart are making it all the way up to steer the direction. And I just have high expectations.
We're speaking with Ted Williams, who's 5th District Supervisor for Mendocino County. And if you'd like to join this conversation, the phone lines are open. It is 895-2448. We've got tons of things to talk about, so please join the conversation. It's 895-2448. If you're in the 5th District and you have questions for your supervisor, or if you're just in the county and you follow county politics, join the conversation. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, I have a question. This is a great discussion, by the way. In terms of the PG&E shutoff power and lack of warning, do we have any in our county, anyone, the head CEO that has any magical avenue to get PG&E to really get a heads up on the warning aspect in terms of danger to life? And I'm going to go ahead and hang up now.
Well, we've asked PG&E to provide as much notice as possible. We've asked PG&E to commit to some reasonable period of notice, and they've fallen short. I would say, maybe in the future, some counties, cities will come together and file for an injunction. And I would ask listeners to contact the California PUC. They approved this action. And maybe explain just how vulnerable this county is, how poorly prepared we are. This county doesn't have funds. We can't accomplish our high-level goals as it is. And here's yet another expense that we didn't ever contemplate.
How is the county preparing for these rolling blackouts?
Silence. So I know Health and Human Services has been working on generator upgrades and putting in transfer switches at key locations. It's surprising how many county facilities don't have backup power. We're on a shoestring, and it wasn't as much of a priority in past times. Some of the potential shelters on the coast are without backup power, say in Fort Bragg, CV Star doesn't have a backup generator.
And PG&E is not providing any grant money or help, financial help, to get backup power.
No, zero.
And another issue that I've heard is that our local cities, Ukiah, uses PG&E's lines but has its own power infrastructure, so it's not going to, the people in Ukiah aren't going to get notification from PG&E because they're not PG&E customers. Do we have another call? Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, I had an idea about allowing the public to be a little more able to respond at the supervisor's hearings. I know we get our 3 minutes, but what we don't get is a chance to refute what the lawyers say or what county council say. And so usually, I mean, I think that's up to the discretion of the chair, and I'm thinking in particular of the asphalt plant hearing where, you know, we came up first and gave our 3 minutes, but then a lot of material was presented by the attorney and by county council that was really not supported by the law or accurate. And so I think that there should be an opportunity for the public to respond to that. That's one comment. And then I have a question for Mr. Williams, if I may, about whether he would be open to a mobile asphalt plant, because there are a lot of advantages to that, of course, especially in the north region of the county where it could be servicing that area. The jobs are smaller and they're wider afield. But I also think that it would put less of a burden on the Ridgewood Ranch, which supplies, I think, the most food to our farmers market, and which is right below this proposed site. So if you could respond to, you know, your feelings or concerns about perhaps considering a mobile asphalt plant, I would appreciate that.
Yeah, I'll start with the public input at the board meetings. It's just as frustrating being on my side when I see an audience of members of the public unable to convey their perspectives in that 3 minutes and without any sort of follow-up. And it really is the discretion of the chair. And, you know, it's already a long meeting. I don't have a perfect solution, but anyone who wants to work with me in advance, you know, the agenda comes out on a Thursday evening. Between then and the Tuesday meeting, I'm all ears. Give me a call. And if you have a perspective, I'm willing to convey it in my position. Even if I don't necessarily agree with it, I'm willing to put it out on the table to make sure that the public is fully represented.
How do people call you?
If you go to TED.net, and all my contact details are listed.
TED.net. All right, we have another call.
Oh, there was a second question there.
Yep.
About the mobile asphalt
pack.
Yeah, I'm all in favor, and I think that it's really independent from this proposed asphalt project. I think there may be a cost benefit. I hope I'm not pulling a Trump, but I think we have about 1,136 miles of road, and not that much different than Sonoma County, but far less revenue. And if you applied all of the property tax, you didn't give any to education or any of the other needs, I think we may still come out short on maintaining our roadways. This was a road network built for resource extraction, not for subdivisions. And we have this rural sprawl where it just doesn't pencil out. And so anything we can do, and I think part of anything is a mobile asphalt plant to avoid hauling gravel great distances across the county. I would add, I think we need more rock quarries. This county used to have more, and I understand that the rock in some areas may not meet the state's requirement on hardness, but you can't be hauling gravel from the Eel River to the South Coast. The climate can't sustain that long term.
Because of the carbon footprint.
And we can't afford it. And so mobile asphalt plant, having more geographically spread rock quarries would make sense.
Let's take another call. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead.
Hi. This is Naomi Wagner. And thank you so much for the show. This is great. And I hope that the other supervisors will follow your example, Ted, and make themselves available for this kind of conversation. I'm actually in John Haschak's district, and I have talked to him about the two things I want to mention. I want to make a comment about PG&E and their lack of notice and how they're just basically throwing people to the winds, to the dogs, to the fires. My youngest son is on dialysis 4 times a week in Ukiah, and he and everyone else who was there would have, basically, they have to go to Santa Rosa at the closest. If PG&E shuts down and if there's no notice, I don't know what people are going to do because they don't have any backup generator. They're just literally going to be stopped in the middle of their treatments, and that could be life-threatening to people, having to drive to Santa Rosa is a huge burden. And what if they black out Sonoma and Mendocino at the same time? So that is a huge concern of mine. And the other thing I want to mention, I want to ask a question about Measure V. And that is, I'm hearing this assumption that if the county enforces Measure V, that they'll be sued and will be sued, and that would be by Mendocino Redwood Company. But I'm wondering, have they actually publicly or on the record said that they will sue? How does one make that assumption, and what would be the next steps to take in that case?
I don't think MRC is the only company doing the hack and squirt. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised to learn that Jackson State Forest may be doing it. And the irony that the state may be violating a local ordinance passed by the people. But I think it's, I think there is a sense of there would be litigation, and it would be a shame to lose that AG opinion that carries weight, given that we've waited so long. And I know that that answer may not satisfy you. It doesn't satisfy me.
All right.
And but there was a part two, the PG&E and dialysis concern. It's my understanding that Inland and Coast both have dialysis centers that don't have backup power, at least as of a couple weeks ago. I know that Health and Human Services is tracking, is putting together lists. I mean, they're even getting down to which gas stations have backup power, and there's quite a few to the north of the county that do not. And I would hope that information would be shared with the public in advance so that, at a minimum, we have clear expectations of what will be online and what won't.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about even cell phone towers and the internet going down if there's no power. So
yeah, most of the cell towers, some of the early towers might not have had backup power. Most of the recently installed towers have diesel generators and fairly large fuel capacities. And AT&T is on notice. They know they may have to truck in. Same with Verizon. I think a larger concern is the landlines. A lot of this county ran out of copper in a lot of rural areas, and so multiplexers were installed. So they would take one copper pair and digitally split it into, say, 24 separate phone lines to go down a shared road. Well, those multiplexers require power. They have batteries, but they only last so long. And so with a five-day outage, we could get into a situation where some landlines no longer work.
Oh, that's also good to know. All right, thanks for that call. Caller, you're on the air.
Okay, this is a complex issue due to where the money comes from. And I've talked to Mr. Williams before about this. The county has access to federal funds to rebuild or replace the one-lane bridge that it goes across the Navarro at Handy Woods, the Philo Greenwood Road Bridge. And I'm, according to Dashiell, the county road supervisor, the county will not have to pay any of it. The federal government will spend it all. And I'm wondering if there's any way to save this one-lane bridge for a couple of reasons. For my personal reason is that it's a beautiful, unique architectural feature right at the bottom of my road in this county. But more importantly, there's $6 million budgeted for it, which could be spent to repair the terrible Greenwood Road and probably some other roads besides. And there's also a safety matter at that bridge. That has been a swimming hole for like over 100 years. On a very hot day, you can see 40 or 50 cars parked there with little kids running around with their boats on top of their heads. Somebody's going to get hurt. The sheriff actually came out and looked at it and agreed that that is will be dangerous. The county's solution is that they want to buy more land across the street and put up a parking lot. So I'm wondering if the county can apply to the federal government to give a waiver on their law that says this money is only supposed to be spent on bridges and see if we can get that money to repair our roads. So I'm asking Ted to take it up if he would.
I'm happy to take it up and make an attempt. I've actually been out swimming there. I know exactly the spot you're talking about. And I'm also aware from talks with our DOT that there are cases where if we don't use the funds as they're allocated, we lose them. And it, you know, if it's earmarked specifically for a bridge with certain failures, we're not going to get that money to apply to Greenwood Road. And we can't have a bridge that's not safe. But I also understand the historic nature of it. And there are times when this, you know, state and federal money just go towards scrapping and building something new when it would cost a whole lot less to replace. I think at a county level, there's, because we're on such a shoestring budget, there's a sense of it being the state's money or the federal money. But really, it's the people's money. And so if we don't need to spend $6 million, it doesn't matter where it's coming from. It's taxpayers' funds. It shouldn't be spent. I know Howard struggles with the timelines. You know, so we have a washout on a road, and it appears that months and months, sometimes years, go by. And it's because of the state process of getting at those funds. And, you know, his department works meticulously at chronicling the problem and checking all the right boxes and ensuring that we do get state or federal dollars. And the effect is sometimes it can take a long time for a project to even begin.
All right. Thanks for that, caller. We have another call. Hey, caller, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for the show. And
oh, can you turn your radio down, please,
doing,
caller?
Ted. My name's Robert Matson. I'm in the Fort Bragg South Fire Safe Council group, and I put a website up, firesafefortbraggsouth.com. It's not the official Fire Safe Council website for that area. It's a fuel load reduction website, and I'm very concerned. I drove around yesterday looking at the anticipated Mitchell Creek escape route through the Pygmy Forest to Gibney Lane. Nothing is going on there, and I'm wondering what's the jam up, because we're in fire season. We need that route opened up. There's been a dialogue. Evidently, it's one property owner, from what I heard from one of the Fire Safe Council members, that is hanging up the negotiations. I believe CAL FIRE and the Pygmy Forest people have signed off on it. I'm not sure. I want to know what you know, so we have that escape route. And then my second question is, is there a grant for chippers for our neighborhood? We need massive fuel load reduction in the Fire Safe, the Fort Bragg South region from Highway 20 down to Casper, Highway 1 over the road, I believe it's 408. It's a route through the forest. And I'm all ears.
So one lesson of, you know, coming into this office, and it took me a while to really put it together, is be careful stepping over the line into other supervisors' districts. And so, you know, we should get Dan Jurdy on the air here.
That would be fantastic.
To talk about the Fort Bragg area.
Would love that.
But in the abstract, we have this problem throughout the county. We have subdivisions that would never be approved under, you know, modern regulation and in light of the changing climate. And a lot of communities feel that they have a unique situation. Well, that their roads are the worst in the county. They're not. Trust me, there are some that are worse you haven't seen, and that they have one egress. And no, that's actually fairly common. And with a changing climate, it's a major concern. So the county doesn't have the financial resources to be acquiring land and putting in roads and, you know, graveling and culverts and everything that go with it. And so it really comes down to finding public-private partnerships, working with landowners. It's a slow and tedious process. I've been pushing for a single map to identify, to like color code where we have these concerns countywide, to at least start tracking how well are we doing year to year. Are we moving that needle?
What department would that be? Who would be doing that mapping?
Probably no department wants it, because with that responsibility comes a need to spend money. Then I've talked to DOT about clearing along roads in my district for fire safety. They came back and said they would love to do that, but they don't have any funds for it. They were never given that task. It's outside of the scope. They clear so that drivers can operate vehicles. And so they're clearing for visibility. They're not clearing for fire prevention. We need fire prevention. I've in the context of fire chief in Albion, I went after a PG&E grant back before the bankruptcy. And it became apparent to clear along roads that we needed traffic control. I said, no problem. We're firefighters. We do traffic control in the middle of the night in some dangerous situations. No, we don't qualify for traffic control at a non-emergency. And we found hiring a contractor to do that traffic control would take about 80% of the grant funds. We weren't going to get a lot of brush clearing. One of the takeaways is we need to be more strategic and plan. Maybe we need to get some volunteers together who can get that state certification for traffic control and be part of a team to pull off the best use of grant dollars.
All right. You're listening to Supervisor Ted Williams, 5th District, Mendocino County. This is a call-in show. I'm your host, Alicia Bales. And we do have the phone lines all lit up, so let's take our next call. Oops, not that one. The next call. Oh, and we waited too long, I guess. Call back, callers. You're on the air. Oh, they're all empty. Okay, 895-2448 is the number. And the phone lines are now open, so you can get through. So when you're talking about being strategic about planning, we're going to launch into another subject here, which is the budget. And you just went through the annual budget planning, right? And so what are your priorities with the budget, and how did that all go? Were you able to make a difference? What got out? What got cut? What got included? Oh, well, here they are. Caller, you're on the air.
Am I on the air?
Yes, you are. Thanks for calling.
Hi, I'd like to address the blacktop plant issue. I just find it pretty frustrating that something as essential as that it's kind of paralysis of bureaucracy, that no matter how much of a no-brainer something is, it just can't happen because the politicians want to keep pleasing. You know, when you talk about building an asphalt plant, you can guarantee that people miles away from it are going to object stridently, you know. But I read a letter to the editor many years ago when they first started talking about building that asphalt plant there that totally convinced me. They pointed out that normally gravel has to be washed before it can be made into blacktop, and each ton, which is a tiny amount of gravel that is washed, takes a gallon of fuel to dry before it can be used for asphalt. And the unique thing about that rock they have there on the Ridgewood grade is that it breaks out cleanly enough to where they don't have to do that. So, you know, it's an enormous savings of burned fossil fuels. And it just seems like the county needs this blacktop so badly. And the politicians just have to say sorry to the people who just will, you can count on it, fight it to the ends of the earth. Because, I mean, it's been 10 years probably since they started talking, and we've been trucking blacktop from who knows where all this time, all that fuel that gets burned. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Some of those points are valid, but I would still argue that we don't sidestep process. It's, you know, there's a vacant lot next to you and someone wants to build a house. They're in a hurry. Do we give them the green light and bypass? No, we make them go through the process. That's all the neighbors were asking. There's a process in place. Follow it.
All right. We have another caller. 895-2448. The lines have been busy, and then people have been hitting the busy signal and dropping. So the lines are open now. And we're on the air with Ted Williams. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Oh,
it's you.
Thank you. Hi. Wow, this is Janae Stevens, and I'm taking off a speaker. All right. Oh, well, thank you for taking my call. Hi, Ted. I'm in your district. We've never met. I voted for you. I'm in Willits. I'm sort of the gerrymandered part out of Willits. And I'm also on the steering committee of a fire safe council, Williams Ranch Road Fire Council. And I don't know if you're aware, you probably are, but Williams Ranch Road, part of Williams Ranch Road, which is one of our escape routes, has collapsed, and it's been a big issue trying to repair it. Now, I understand, let me get back to this one email here that I got,
Okay, so that I heard that the County Department of Transportation has publicly stated that we're not in the business of building new roads, but under the now this is in regards to Sherwood, under the direction of CEO Carmel Angelo, they've agreed to support making the first two emergency access routes out of Brook Trails drivable. So I'm just wondering, although it is a private road, we've really wanted the county to take it over. Is the county able to help us out at all on this so that we have another escape route?
Do you help you out, meaning financially?
I don't know. Financially, however, yeah. Yes. Or maybe, you know, getting some of the crews over here, yeah.
Yeah, so the crews have a dollar cost associated with them, too.
Sure.
The difficulty, I mean, I see the difficulty is in getting three votes to take budget from one department and allocate it to another. And it's because we're not doing zero-based budgeting. Because, you know, if we started out this year with our top priorities, agreeing to meet those first before we go on to the lesser priorities, well, I'll tell you, we wouldn't get very far down the list before we'd run out of money. But we would probably be tackling the escape routes, second access. But when it's structured in a way that we're taking last year's budget and we don't have enough additional to carry out our priorities, puts the supervisors in a position of having to cut something. Do we lay off a deputy? Well, our sheriff would tell us he has about the same amount of deputies as the 1970s. That doesn't sound like a good idea, but it really comes to that. What is it that we're going to cut so that we can pay for that road? And it's difficult. And then compounding with that is if we're covering, if we're going to cut $1 million to pay for that road, whose district is it in? And will that collect two other votes? Probably better to think of this as a countywide problem and maybe try to go after some state funds.
All right. It looks like we have time for one more quick call. Oh, hello, caller. Just one more quick call with Ted Williams.
Yes.
Can you turn your radio off, please?
And I would like very much.
Can you turn your radio off, please?
Redwood Quality Management and the mental health issue. I was at the meeting, and I want to thank you so much for your objection to just rubber stamping the budget for the $1 million, $18 million for mental health. I think that we need oversight, civilian review boards. We need workshops where the communities are invited to participate in the expenditure of these funds for prevention of mental illness, to propose to build $12 million for upgrading for 12 beds. Is obscene and absurd. We need to have daycare places where people can do art and music and cooking, you know, where people can come. And we need community gardens.
All right, caller, that's going to do it for us today. Thank you for your call. That does it for the hour. The guest has been Ted Williams. Thank you so much for coming in, Ted.
Sounds like we need to do it again.
Yeah, definitely. We've got thank you, callers, for calling in. This is terrific. It really makes me feel like this is programming that you want to hear. And I hope that your compatriots on the Board of Supervisors, the other soups, want to come in and talk with us as well, because there's obviously the interest is here. So special thanks to Rich Culbertson for engineering. Thanks to you, callers. And thanks to you for listening. This is KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ Willits and Ukiah at 91.5 FM, and Fort Bragg at 88.1 FM. Altogether, we are Mendocino County Public Broadcasting, listener-supported community radio.